Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com. Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Mexico's raging drug war came to Acapulco last week. Gunmen disguised as soldiers stormed two police stations with automatic weapons and video cameras. They killed seven police and staff and taped the whole grisly scene. The Acapulco killings were just one more deadly skirmish in a suddenly white-hot war between Mexico's central government and the drug kingpins and cartels that feed the U.S. market for illegal drugs. Since taking office in December, President Felipe Calderón has ordered thousands of federal troops into the fray, disarmed whole corrupt police forces, extradited drug lords to American prisons, and vowed no truce and no quarter. Up next on Point, inside Mexico's complex war on the drug trade. Joining me first today from Mexico City for the latest on President Calderón's campaign is Sam Enriquez. He's Mexico City correspondent for the Los Angeles Times. Sam, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
We're well. Give us a sense, if you could, of the scale of this crackdown.
Well, I think Calderón has about 25,000 personnel spread out, mostly soldiers, some federal police spread out among seven states. And these are the states that were hit hardest in last year's drug war. Some 2,000 or more people are believed to have been killed as a result of that.
Wow.
In basically what shapes up to be a battle between East Coast and West Coast drug organizations.
Sam, describe for us, if you would, the flow of drugs through Mexico. Where do they come from and where do they go to exactly?
Well, I think the U.S. DEA and other agencies estimate that Colombia produces the bulk of all the cocaine, which is the highest-priced drug that moves through Mexico, some 700 tons maybe a year. Maybe 200 of that's lost in transit, which leaves about 500 tons that probably makes its way from Colombia to ports on the west side of Mexico, where they're shipped, they're offloaded and then shipped overland, and ports on the east side on the Yucatan Peninsula.
So that's coming up from Colombia. Is that it? Is it basically cocaine, or are there more dimensions to it?
Well, there's a lot more. I mean, marijuana, tons and tons of marijuana are grown in Mexico in the Sierra Madre Highlands on the Pacific Coast side. Also, there are these super methamphetamine labs, which are transforming Mexico and the U.S. with the new high-powered forms of methamphetamine that's making its way across the border as well. And also, poppy is grown in those same mountains in Mexico and used to make black tar Mexican heroin.
The U.S. as obviously the major market. What are the main transit areas or points between Mexico and the United States?
Well, a lot of what's at play, and one of the ports of entry that the two sides are battling over is the I-35 corridor in Texas. On the Texas side, it's Laredo. On the Mexican side, it's Nuevo Laredo. And the East Coast organization, the so-called Gulf Cartel, has had that for years, and the West Coast organization has gone in the last couple of years trying to make headway, trying to take over that corridor, but that's one of the main points. Of course, there's Juarez, which is a little further west. There's entry points in Arizona and New Mexico as well, but the other main points are on the west coast, the Tijuana, Mexicali, that border up to Southern California.
Now, we'll look at the crackdown, but describe for us something about the cartels, if you would. Who runs them? Where are they primarily based? And take us further into this competition between them that left maybe 2,000 dead last year in Mexico.
Well, the on the West Coast side, the Sinaloa-based groups have been smuggling for decades, from Prohibition forward, and they have been led in recent years by Joaquin Guzman, who had been arrested by Mexican authorities and kept in a high-security prison. He escaped about 4 or 5 years ago in a laundry cart, and he's ostensibly the head of what's sort of a loosely affiliated group of West Coast-based or drug smuggling organizations. And his counterpart on the East Coast is a fellow by the name of Ociel Cardenas, the leader of the so-called Gulf Cartel. He had been arrested and had been apparently running the cartel from a maximum security prison outside of Mexico City until his extradition to the U.S. last month. So those are the two basic groups that are competing for control of a market in the U.S. that estimates run as high as $60 billion.
Give us a sense, then, of the crackdown, the shape of it, how it has unfolded. Federal troops, including authorities, including military troops engaged here. How? Where? Why?
Well, I'll start with the why. Calderon, as you may recall, won the election last July in Mexico by the thinnest of margins.
Mm-hmm. Disputed for a long time by his opposition.
That's right. And he campaigned on three major issues: jobs, alleviation of poverty, and security. Now, those security ended up being the topic he went after first, and he did it for a number of reasons. First of all, the number of people killed last year, and they were done in dramatic fashion. I mean, part of what makes this drug war so gruesome has been the beheadings and the torture and the burning of bodies and
even of police. 30 police killed in Tijuana, 3 of them found decapitated last year.
That's right. So while it's a difficult task, it seemed easier to get started on that, I think, from a practical and political point of view. Creating jobs is going to be tough in Mexico. Alleviating poverty is going to be tough in Mexico. But Calderon didn't need congressional approval or anything else. He's the commander-in-chief, so he could send out the army, which he did. He first sent them out to his home state of Michoacan, and then they've spread to the Sinaloa, so-called Golden Triangle, where Sinaloa, Chihuahua, and the third state meet, and then up to Baja California, to Tijuana, where allegations of corruption among police, which is fairly widespread in Mexico, the allegations, that is, caused him to disarm the entire local police force.
Kind of incredible.
For about 3 or 4 weeks.
Yeah.
So essentially what you have is a Mexican army in 7 states. They've set up roadblocks. They stop people. It's a pretty dramatic use of the military, and the first time, I think, in Mexico that they've used it for this kind of domestic operation.
And then this slaughter of police just last week in Acapulco, and wire stories out now saying that the authorities are looking at whether the mayor himself in Acapulco may be implicated. The issue of corruption seems to stretch pretty deep into halls of power in Mexico around drugs.
Well, I think that's true. I think there is certainly Mexico suffers from corruption that starts at the most innocent level. It's a country where a traffic cop will pull you over, and you'll ask him, "Why are you pulling me over?" And he'll say, "Because your brake light's out." You go around the car, check the brake light, seems to be working, and he says, "Well, but it was out when I pulled you over."
Mm.
And it moves on up. It's the professionalization of police has not happened here. There's low pay, and for many officers, the temptation, of course, is also balanced by the threat. So the choice may be between taking the money or facing violence if you don't go along.
President Calderon is not the first Mexican president to try and crack down on drugs. How long can he keep this up? Federal troops, you know, disarming local police forces, big ones like in Tijuana. I mean, it's a big effort to keep a drug war running at this pace, this heat. Does it have legs? And what does success look like? Can he possibly get it, shut it down?
Well, I think that from a political point of view, Calderon's goal is probably not to end the drug trade. I think that his probably short and medium term goals are to at least end the most dramatic displays of violence between the two sides. If he can do that, I think he can declare some victory. But unfortunately, the killings have seemed to have gone on regardless of the presence of soldiers in these states, as witnessed in Acapulco. Now, what happened in Acapulco was the local police were booted out of their police stations and replaced by state police. And when armed men with AK-47s and fatigues came in and killed the five officers and two secretaries, It was believed to have been local police trying to recapture or at least send a signal that they weren't going to be taken out of play.
President Bush calling President Calderon last month to say, you know, good on you for doing this. What about the U.S. side? We don't hear much about the war on drugs in the United States these days with Iraq and everything else going on. Does Calderon have a partner in this effort with the United States government?
Well, that's an interesting question. Of course, the drug war in the U.S. was front and center for a number of years, but in Bush's last State of the Union address, I think it was the first one in many years in which the drug war or drug rehabilitation wasn't mentioned at all. It's pretty much fallen off the radar in the U.S. politically. A colleague of mine, Josh Meyer, did a story out of the Washington Bureau that pointed out that the military support for drug interdiction has fallen dramatically on the U.S. side. And for years, of course, the U.S. has been asking for cooperation from Mexico, and for the first time in years, they have a president who's aggressively pursuing the drug war, but it seems that Calderon doesn't have too much of a partner at this moment on the U.S. side.
Sam Enriquez, he's Mexico City correspondent for the Los Angeles Times. Sam, thanks very much for being with us.
Sure, you're welcome, Tom.
I'm joined right now from Providence, Rhode Island, by Arturo Alvarado. He's president of the Mexico City organization, Democracy, Human Rights, and Security. They promote policies of public security there. He's a professor of sociology at El Colegio de Mexico, currently visiting professor at the Watson Institute at Brown University. Mr. Alvarado, thanks for being with us today.
Good morning, Tom. Thank you for inviting me.
And from Washington, we're joined by Joy Olson, executive director at the Washington Office on Latin America. They promote human rights in Latin America. She's been closely following the drug trade and drug trafficking cartels for a long time. Joy Olson, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Arturo Alvarado, first to you. Why do you think President Calderon has made this such a big priority right out of the gate, right at the beginning of his presidency?
Okay, well, I think there are three most very important targets in this thing. First, of course, is put a foot on the issue. I mean, this is a bad. I mean, drug selling and drug distribution and drug going through Mexico has been increasing during the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And the past administration did little but nothing in trying to fight drug consumption in Mexico and also in developing new policies. So Calderon needed a strong foot to start with this issue. This is the first thing. And he needed the military to work on this thing because police does not help, does not work, and it's involved in the narcotraffic. Second, this is a political move. He needs to show to the people, to the international community, and to the drug cartels that he is going to have a tough policy on the issue. And part of the idea was just to start with this thing. Third, what are the results? I mean, of course, there has been some few results. On the one hand, you can see that there is an opinion, a public opinion that is favorable to this, to these interventions.
And drug kingpins extradited to the United States, which has not happened for a while.
It's been happening. I mean, it's been just slow because it's not easy to get big drug lords and just put them on the plane and just take them back into the put them into the United States courts.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that easy.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? In a way, there is a complex legal system in Mexico that has to be respected in order to do that. You have to prove that these guys are real drug lords, and then they have rights. So you have to respect the judicial system if you really want a rule of law working in the country.
Joy Olson, in Washington, President Calderon has talked about organized crime being out of control in Mexico, he told a Spanish newspaper. Of course, there's that notorious case, 5 severed heads dumped in a dance hall in Michoacan. How deep has the impact gone of this huge drug money and the power of the drug cartels? Is this just a kind of marginal crime issue with Mexico, or is it getting at sort of the heart of Mexican politics and culture?
I think it is a serious issue in terms of the Mexican state, especially in particular parts of the country, some that have been talked about already, border cities like Nuevo Laredo or Juarez or Tijuana, other places like Acapulco, places where you've seen some of the biggest shows of force in recent days. I wanted to make a couple of comments in response to the last two speakers. First, the current kind of show of force on the part of the Calderón administration is not something new in terms of its approach to the drug war.
Vicente Fox had his own crackdown early on, as I recall.
Yeah, there was a program called Operation Safe Mexico that was a response to tremendous violence that at that time was taking place in Nuevo Laredo, just across from Laredo, Texas. And, you know, what you find is that you can move the military into an area. You can get rid of the local police or purge the local police, but you can't use the military in this capacity all the time. And at some point, you have to get at the fundamental issues, which are police and judicial reform and consumption in the United States, which is really the fundamental issue here.
We'll look at that. But Arturo Alvarado says police don't work. So if the police don't work, I guess essentially because of corruption, what's the alternative to having federal forces or troops in there?
Well, the alternative is to get at long-term police reform issues because, as I'm saying, the military has had a role in the drug war for the past 40 years in Mexico in eradication and some other activities. So I think we have to get beyond thinking that this is a new phenomenon, what's going on right now in Mexico, and get back to the issue of these are really long-term fundamental reforms that have to take place. The military can be used, but they can only be used as a temporary solution.
But the scale seems to grow and grow, even if the dynamic is familiar. Arturo Alvarado, what about the police versus the federal military? How do you see these roles going forward?
I mean, the problem with police is that there are several organizations and there are several institutions at the local, at the state, and the federal level. There is not a single police corps in Mexico today that is trained to fight this narcotraffic trend. This is the first and most important thing. This is an issue for a new federal police training program, not for local police. Local police are for community policing and for several other issues. There is corruption, there is problems of training, etc. But you need another kind of police to fight this issue. Second, and this is very important to understand, is not only the issue about narcotraffic and passing the drugs to the United States and drug consumption in the United States. During the last 10 years in Mexico, we have seen an increase in drug consumption at all the local levels, up to the point that if you can see that several of the narco leaders that have been captured during the last 3 or 4 weeks are local leaders. It's people that is not driving the drugs to the United States. It's just selling the drugs at the state and local level. So we can see that there is an increasing issue of drug consumption in Mexico that has to be attacked to new policies. And this is not only police reform, for sure. It also needs several public policies on the health sector.
So a kind of spillover now leading to significant drug consumption in Mexico itself, but still with that big magnet of American consumption. Let me begin to bring our listeners in here, if I may. Let's go to Spokane, Washington. And John, hi, John, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Certainly. What do you think, John?
I agree with the current actions taken by the Mexican government. And I also look at our consumption in the United States as being the major problem. If we weren't willing to purchase it, they wouldn't be willing to sell it to us.
So what about the war on drugs here? It didn't seem to tamp that appetite down very much. Is there any solution to that, or is it just an eternal market in the U.S.?
Well, I think you had it right, the second part of that. It's a social issue. Man, we haven't done enough to stamp it out, and I don't believe that so long as our social issues are what they are today, it will be any different.
John, thanks for your call. Joe Olson, what about that market, that demand from the U.S.? It's only grown, as far as I know. Is there any hope of that somehow diminishing to help Mexico deal with the trade in its own side of the border?
Well, I'd like to say that it is diminishing, but that's not what the indicators tell us. Mm-hmm. What we see is that consumption in the United States, if anything, but there are big debates. You can count the numbers a bunch of different ways to make the case that it's marginally increasing or marginally decreasing. What you can say is that despite massive efforts on the part of the United States to eradicate and interdict drugs coming from the Andes into the United States over the past 20 years, what you find is that the price of cocaine on the streets of the U.S. is currently at or near a historic low. So despite massive investment, basically we're at a standstill. And I want to add one more thing that I think it's really important to remember here, and the Mexicans certainly know this, that what's going on in Mexico hasn't always been this way. The kinds of violence related to the drug trade, that sort of thing. Back in the mid-1980s, the U.S. decided, we all remember the TV show Miami Vice, mm-hmm. and when drug consumption was a huge issue in Miami. Mm-hmm. Well, the U.S. decided that it was really bad in South Florida, and so they were going to concentrate interdiction on the Caribbean. And they did, and to a great extent, they cut off much of the trafficking that was going in through Miami. What happened at that point was that the traffickers find another route. So they looked to Mexico, which had historic trafficking of marijuana, but not cocaine and mm-hmm. not the kind of violence that you see taking place now. So then, as a result of this U.S. decision to clean up Miami, what Mexico found was massive amounts of cocaine then coming through Mexico. And the impact of that was both the corruption and the violence that you see today and the consumption issue, because then, again, another change by the traffickers. The traffickers started paying the intermediaries who were passing the drugs through Mexico in product instead of in money. Mm-hmm. And so what you found was enormous amounts of cocaine suddenly in the Mexican market, which then pushed the consumption that's taking place now.
Joy, what portion of cocaine coming into the United States today comes through Mexico? Do you know? Is it known?
There are different variations. The highest percentage I've seen is 90%, but some say less.
90%, as much as that in any case. Arturo Alvarado, with all that cocaine and all the money that comes with it, what's your sense of how deep into the Mexican government the corruption may go? The local police, I guess that's clear and acknowledged in the disarming of the Tijuana police force.
But acknowledged in several border cities, most than any other places. But they now, it's hitting several major cities and tourist places, like Acapulco for sure. But, we haven't heard anything about Cancun, for instance, which is a really major place of drug consumption in the country. But there will be operations there pretty soon if they want to really hit on this front. The consumption is rising in Mexico. The point here is now there has not been any policies and any legislation to attack this problem in Mexico. Actually, the former administration of Fox tried to, stop a new policy and the enactment of a new law of battling drug consumption at the local level.
Mm-hmm.
We have to, the new government has to push for new legal agreements with this thing. They had to enact a legislation that will allow the state and local governments to fight the drug consumption. And not only that, they had to really promote a new policy for health, a health program to prevent and to combat this issue. This is on the one hand, this is a very important social and health issue. On the other hand, on the police sector, what is important to understand is that there is not a single police corps at local and state level that can fight these narcotraffic lords. And there's no way. You don't have the resources, you don't have the training, you don't have the intelligence information, etc. This has to run through special operations, but not military operations, because the problem with using the military, is that military can get corrupt too. Actually, that had happened in the past in Mexico, and not only in the past in Mexico, all through Latin America, you can see this problem is revolving. So you really need to promote a new policy to fight the narco traffic, the passing of the drugs, and then there is another issue that is related to this thing, which is all what is called the narco economy.
Yum.
In Mexico. There's tons, billions of money coming into Mexico from this business. How are you going to fight this thing? What policies are you going to promote at the economic level, not only to avoid or fight money laundering, but also to promote some other policies that will make the government, will make the public, will make the social sectors invest in other issues rather than in investing in this.
Billions of dollars and a narco economy.
I mean, that are running in the economy, and you can see that there is money laundering in several cities in clear issues about real estate, restaurants, development, financial sector, services development. Because this money is getting into Mexico and it's running part of the economy.
And we're talking
how are you gonna fight this?
Many billions. Let me get a call, if I may, from Cohasset, Massachusetts. Hi, Kevin, you're on the air.
Yes, I wanted to kind of address your discussion centering around consumption and distribution and processing.
Yeah.
But there's been no discussion of production, where you go, where you would approach the actual growers of the product.
I mean, looking back to the Andes, back to Colombia, back south of there.
Right, right into the Mexico, into the farming communities. Now, my understanding is these farmers make just a few thousand dollars a year, and the dollars are really made in production, or excuse me, processing, distribution, and consumption. It occurs to me that if we went to the producers of the product and competed with the narco traffickers with the purchase of that product, so the U.S. government, in fact, or the Mexican government, would actually buy the product and over time convert these farmers into producing a more appropriate product.
Kevin, that's one. Maybe it's been tried, but it's one I haven't really heard or focused on. Thanks for that, Joy Olson. What about the production side of this? How much in Mexico as a percentage? How much for the South and South America? And how to address it?
Well, when Mexico produces a substantial amount of marijuana, but most of the cocaine that traffics through Mexico is produced in the Andes, much of it in Colombia, but also in Peru, Bolivia, other areas. The majority of it right now coming from Colombia. The U.S. and the governments of the region have tried to shift farmers to other activities, economic activities. It's a difficult proposition because some of the areas in which those areas are really not very good for producing much of anything else in terms of agricultural crops, and it's a high cash crop. Also, a lot of what's gone on in Colombia the past few years has been this aerial fumigation program. They, large planes come by and
right.
spray fumigants on coca crops and whatever other crops are being grown, and the attempt is to destroy them at the root, in a sense, and reduce the amount of drugs then that are available to the United States. This really hasn't worked either. What you find after a massive investment by the U.S. in Plan Colombia the past 6 years, much of it on the eradication of coca, what you find is that even though the more and more we fumigate, the more and more is getting grown. So the actual amount that is estimated to be under cultivation right now is pretty much the same as it was at the beginning of Plan Colombia in 2000.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Mexico's big crackdown on the drug trade. More than 2,000 drug-related killings in Mexico last year. The new president, Felipe Calderon, saying enough is enough. He told Mexican governors last week, or recently, the Mexican people are demanding that their parks, their streets, their schools, their neighborhoods be safe places for their families. And he's talking about the drug trade that goes to the USA. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can join us. What have you seen? Joy Olson is with us in Washington. She's executive director of the Washington Office on Latin America. From Providence, Rhode Island, we're joined by Arturo Alvarado. He's president of the Mexico City Organization, Democracy, Human Rights, and Security. And right now, from right down on the Texas border with Mexico, joining us from Del Rio, Texas, is Dwayne Jernigan. He's sheriff in Valverde County, which sits right on the border of Mexico there. Sheriff Jernigan, thanks very much for being with us today.
Hello, thank you.
Do you see evidence of the new crackdown on the drug trade going on in Mexico?
We are beginning to see some evidence up and down the border. We have seen very little directly across from me here, but in talking with my fellow sheriffs up and down the border, we are starting to see some crackdowns in various areas along the border.
You see, You sit there in Del Verde County, right on the border, north of Laredo, sort of west of San Antonio. How big a problem is the drug trade out of Mexico for you as sheriff there?
It is a problem. It is not the problem it was as recent as a year ago. We welcome the efforts by the new president of Mexico. It brings us hope that we may have some help on the way to crack down on what's been happening over there the past several years. We do look forward to a reduction in the amount of cocaine and meth and marijuana that has been crossing our border.
You say that some relief in the last year. What's that about? Is it just moved away from your particular locality, or do you have a sense of something else going on? It certainly sounds there's been plenty of trouble and volume in Mexico.
Yes, there is trouble in Mexico, but it seems like the new government, the new administration over there is taking a different stance than the previous administration. They are cracking down considerably, being much tougher on the dealers than what we had seen in the past. And this does give us, as law enforcement along the Texas-Mexico border, does give us hope.
Have you seen a problem with the violence that's been so evident in Mexico spilling over with the drug trade into the U.S. in your area?
Not in our area, but particularly in Laredo, as you know, they've had their problems. Also had some problems out west around El Paso, Husband County. But here it has not spilled over yet. It has occurred in Acuna and in Piedras Negras across the river from us.
So it can get mean. Sheriff Jernigan, please stand by for a minute, if you will. I want to bring some listeners in. Jack's calling from Boston. Hi, Jack. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
What I wanted to say is, for nearly four decades, you know, we've been fighting this war on drugs. We've already spent over $1 trillion of our U.S. tax dollars on it. We've made more than 35 million arrests for nonviolent drug offenses. Yet today, drugs are cheaper, more potent, and far easier for our children to get than they were in 1970 at the beginning of that war.
So what's to be
done? I started buying them as an undercover officer.
You were in the U.S. law enforcement.
Yes, I was. I was 26 years in New Jersey State Police, 14 years undercover in narcotics.
Okay.
And after I retired, I got together with four other police officers. We started an organization called LEAP, or Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, back in 2002.
That is in favor of legalizing drugs?
Absolutely, all drugs. It has since grown to a number of 6,500 members who, like us, feel that in order to lower the incidence of death, disease, crime, and addiction, we have to end drug prohibition.
Why do you think it would lower the level of addiction if drugs were legal and presumably more readily available?
Well, we can show that it has done exactly that by looking at other countries like Switzerland, where they decided to treat drug abuse as a health problem instead of a crime problem. They started allowing heroin users to come in and actually inject that terrible drug up to three times a day, a government-issued drug in clinics, and the outcomes of that over a 10-year period has been that there hasn't been a single overdose death there. AIDS and hepatitis dropped to the lowest per capita rates in all of Europe. Crime was cut by 60%. Nobody has to prostitute themselves or break into your car at night and steal your cell phone to buy the drugs because they're free, and because they are free, nobody is selling heroin on the streets where these projects are. So what that means is the dealers aren't out there in the community killing each other to control the market. They're not killing cops charged with fighting this useless war. And more important, because they're not in the communities rubbing shoulders with our children, or at least over in Switzerland, they're not in a position where they can lure them and entice them into picking up that nasty needle and becoming the next heroin-addicted statistic. And because of that, last year, The Lancet, very prestigious medical journal, did a 10-year study on this, which shows in Zurich there has been an 82% decline in the projected new cases of heroin users. That means young people aren't picking up this drug because the heroin users aren't out there to entice them.
Jack, let me put that to the sheriff who's on the border fighting this, Dwayne Jernigan. How about it? There's a call from a longtime former law enforcement agent, undercover himself, saying, let's legalize this. It's the only way to get around it. How does that sound to you on the border of Mexico?
Well, I've spent 42 years down here doing this, and I'm not convinced, but I am willing to sit down and listen and If there's a better way to do it, I think we should look at it and consider it. At the moment, I'm not convinced, but I'm willing to listen and learn. And if there is a better way, let's go for it.
Mm. Jack, thanks very much for your call. Joy Olson, perhaps it would never be politically palatable, but does it look like it could be a solution? Does the Switzerland model, might it hold for the U.S. and, for that matter, Mexico?
Well, there really are various models and approaches out there. One similar to the Swiss model, but again, all these things can have various components. But the fundamental one is the idea of harm reduction. How do you look both from the production, the trafficking, and the consumption end of the chain of drugs and try and figure out how you reduce the terrible harm that's caused? If you're on if you're on the production end, it can be anything from again incarcerations because of enforcement, mm-hmm. but of people simply growing coca. It can be tremendous corruption that takes place in local government. It can be violence to some extent there as well. And then how do you look at the transiting countries? What is the corruption, the violence that's taking place in the transiting countries, and now the consumption, the large consumption that's taking place in the transit countries that 10 years ago was not the case. Mm. And again, then here in the U.S., how do you look at drug consumption and try and figure out how to reduce the harm, the serious harm caused by these drugs on our communities? Again, looking at the health issues, looking at the violence issues, looking at the corruption issues, and going after those. I want to say one or two more things about Mexico.
Please.
One is that the violence that you're seeing in Mexico, again, not just this year. This has been going on the past few years. It kind of peaks in different areas at different times. But a lot of it has to do with enforcement. When the government cracks down on one cartel, heads of the cartels are arrested. Then territory becomes under dispute. Other cartels,
so it's kind
or
of gang these, war breaks out, or can
yeah, basically, it's what Nuevo Laredo saw last year. Mm. So you see these things taking place at different times. The U.S. government at different times has almost viewed it as a sign of success. But I think that's a disturbing concept that
these
levels of violence would be interpreted that way. Mm. But I think it comes back to one fundamental point, which is that the only way you're going to get at this issue is by taking a multi-sectoral approach that looks at reducing harm. And it's got to be a multilateral approach because, Mexico basically can send as many troops as it wants all over the country, mm. and they are not going to by themselves be able to fundamentally deal with this problem. You've got to have the production, the transit, the consumption countries all working together on a coordinated strategy that, again, looks at the reduction of harm on these things. And so it's tough if you're on the Mexican side of this because basically no matter what they do, they are going to be hampered by the fact that the U.S. is not dealing sufficiently with consumption.
Arturo Alvarado, what about at the cultural level? When Mexicans look at the drug problem, do they see this as an American, Norte Americano problem that has, fallen down on them? How is drug use seen in Mexico? Is it absolutely socially unacceptable? What's the cultural reception?
What you can see with these corridos and with all this popular culture that is surrounded around the drug, especially in the northeast of Mexico.
That's in Duane Jernigan's territory,
yes,
Chihuahua.
And yep. The northwest, mm-hmm. all the northern territories, they have a strong culture of music related to drug use, drug abuse, drug cartels, etc. And this is not just a simple issue about that this is an American problem. Of course this is an American problem mm-hmm. because, and this is it's a key point, the problem we have in the relation between Mexico and the United States is that the United States has been just tough about in the issue that you had to fight these drug lords, you had to bring them to me, you had to put your troops, you had to do whatever
yes.
in order to serve my interests.
American, USA interests.
I don't care about the consequences of fighting a drug war in your country, which is a war which damages civil society, civil rights, human rights, kills people, use the army for other purposes than mm-hmm. what is the constitutional duty of an army. Mm-hmm. Policing and narcotraffic mm-hmm. is not a constitutional issue. It's against the Constitution, actually. Mm-hmm. So this is harming what the country needs to do to produce and to build up a rule of law. And the people in Mexico knows about that thing, and they have a very strong popular root about the use of drugs, traditional drugs, for several medicine purposes or other, I mean, festive religious purposes.
Right.
Not the coke, not cocaine. Mm-hmm. Cocaine is a different issue, and also the synthetic drugs, which consumption is growing in Mexico. This is a different issue that is coming from all these new trends of globalization, illegal economy growing to not only to the to Mexico, but all through the North American area. So, and this is getting enrooted in this in the life of the people. Why? Because the problem that you're having now is that the formal economy and formal and strong employment is not growing in Mexico. People has to go to services, he has to go to the informal economy, has to migrate to the United States, had to produce their own, I mean, to get their own needs and basic things for life in the informal sector. And the informal sector is strongly embedded in the illegal economy. Part of this illegal economy is the drug industry.
Right up against that big drug trade.
People is getting into this issue. It's not that people really like to consume or sell drugs. If you have this opportunity and this alternative and there is no better job for you, what is happening?
Yeah,
there is no enforcement and there is no incentive from the government or from society to do any other thing.
We know what happens in that situation. Let me take a call from Trenton, New Jersey. John, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'd like to bring up American farm subsidies and the pressure that that puts on foreign farmers to go out of normal bounds and start producing stuff like cacao and marijuana instead of, you know, producing other cash crops.
So we have the farm subsidies and then the cheap corn that goes abroad undermines the local agriculture. At least that's the story we've been told. Joy Olson, what about it?
Certainly, local communities, farming communities have suffered in Mexico and in Central America under the trade agreements that have been negotiated. Colombia, a trade agreement is being negotiated with Colombia and with the other Andean countries right now, and it's a huge concern. What do you do to the markets of the markets for small producers, especially of subsistence kinds of crops? So this is something that should be thought about.
What about the ethanol boom, if I may ask? That's driving up the price of corn in the U.S. I don't know, eventually may push away the subsidy. But if corn becomes more expensive because of ethanol mania, how does that hit farmers in Mexico, Arturo Alvarado?
It will hit them badly because of two things. To begin with, the market of, I mean, the poor farmers in Mexico are not allowed on our, I mean, they don't have any subsidies. They don't have any government support to really grow the market, grow corn in their market. Second, the market of the world market of corn is going to become increasingly more expensive, and that has to be, that is going to have an impact in everyday life, not only in poor market people in Mexico, but also in people that consume corn.
Mm.
It's going to be very expensive in the next few years, unless you don't revise the free trade agreement in this issue.
Mm. Sheriff Jernigan in Del Rio, Texas, we just got you for another minute, I know. What about your cooperation with Mexican authorities across the border? Do you have any, or do you fight this from one side of the border?
Yes, we do have some cooperation from the Mexican side, in particular in property crimes. They have been fairly successful or have stepped forward and helped us in recovering stolen properties, vehicles, et cetera, that does escape to their side of the border.
But on the trade itself, do you get a heads up from Mexican police saying, watch out, here comes a big shipment?
No.
No. Doesn't that seem strange?
Yes. To a certain extent, the particular police that investigate the property crimes are different than the ones that work the narcotic crimes.
That would seem like a minimum, but I guess you're still not getting that, and I know we do have to let you go there in Del Rio. Sheriff Dwayne Jernigan, Sheriff in Valverde County, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Joy Olson, you had a last point to make, and I want to be sure you get to make it.
Thank you. My point is that, you know, what we're seeing right now in Mexico is again, a big show of force. It's looking tough on drugs right now, and it's responding to a reality, which has been tremendous violence. I think that one of these days, as policymakers both in Mexico and the United States and other countries in Latin America, we've got to get over just looking tough, that it's not the same as being effective.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a really serious problem. And just going around looking like you're being the tough guy is not solving the problem. So it's one of these days we have to get beyond thinking looking tough is good enough and start getting smart about how we're going to deal with a really complicated problem.
May that day come soon on many, many fronts, including this one. I'll say amen to that. We're out of time, but you've both been great to join us and so generous with your insights. Joy Olson at the Washington Office on Latin America. Joy, thank you very much for being with us this hour.
Thank you.
And Arturo Alvarado, president of Mexico City's Democracy, Human Rights, and Security Organization. Mr. Alvarado, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.